In the centre of the hall, there was a circle of name cards on stands, each with a name and a country, representing people who couldn't be here today to tell their story. Yelena from Russia. They tell me to pray the gear away, but all I pray is to breathe freely. Chibuike from Nigeria. Every time I laugh or speak too freely in the street, it reminds me that my joy is illegal here. And Jessica from the UK, where people misname and misgender me. Please call me Jessica. These are the voices of people who couldn't feel safe to be who they truly are. But it's time these voices are heard. This is Gateshead and Proud, episode 3. It's time for change. Welcome back. Last time I went to the Pilar Lawn Bowls Club for the Pride Lawn Bowls Tournament to meet with local organisations to see what not only our local government is doing to make sure we feel safe to be out and proud, but I also wanted to meet with other local groups who work directly within the community to provide the education and support we need to not only the people inside our community, but to others outside the LGBT community as well. I would definitely recommend listening to not only the episode, but to episode 1 as well, to truly get a good basis of what we're going to be talking about today, because with every episode it feels like we're just peeling into another layer of what our community is and what our issues are. At the very end of the last episode, I spoke with Drew Dalton from Report Out. They're a global humanitarian organisation who are all about holding people from around the world accountable for their actions and making sure that everyone has equal rights. You may have also noticed that he mentioned a summit that the organisation was holding, Safer to Be Me 2025. This summit invited activists and organisations from around the world to come to one hall right here in Gateshead to figure out what we can do to make the world safer to be me. And I was actually lucky enough to be given access to this summit, and that is exactly where we will be going in this episode. Preparing for this summit, I got to get a little peek into what would be offered that day. And I was completely spoiled for choice. Not only were there amazing speakers like Lady Phil and Drew Dalton, and panels around immigration and workplace safety, but there were also breakout sessions which were held by experts from all over the world giving insights into problems affecting our community and how we can fix them. My plan was to speak with as many people as I can to be able to highlight problems affecting our community around the world and to find out what our first steps should be to fix them. But I don't think anything could have prepared me for the richness of community I found that day. The day opened with a keynote by Lady Phil. She's the founder of UK Black Pride, along with being such a strong activist within our community, fighting for our human rights for over 20 years. And being able to hear her speak was so interesting because honestly, I'd prepared myself to experience almost like a business conference situation. But being there in the room with her, the audience wasn't just listening to a professional. They were a community listening to a voice who supported them, respected them, and truly it felt like she was on the same level as us.
So this conference is asking us, what makes it safer to be me? But for millions of us, LGBTQI plus people across the globe, the real question is, when was it ever safe? And who is it safe for? So let's be honest, in over 60 countries, it is still a criminal offence to be LGBTQ plus. In 11 of those countries, queer people can face the death penalty. Trans people, especially black and brown trans women, are being murdered at alarming rates. And we're seeing this all too often, and often with impunity. In Uganda, the Anti-Homosexuality Act ushered in a chilling wave of state violence. In Ghana, we're seeing most recently the bill that has come back into parliament, which has no regard for our lives, then you must understand that LGBT plus people, and remember, our language has been colonized in ways so lesbian and gay does not exist in the Ghanaian language. It's often something quite derogatory. So trying to explain that LGBT plus people have a hard time as well, it's not that she wanted to understand, but it was that she understood that hurt and pain and discrimination affects everyone. Definitely, definitely, you're not doing this alone. And we talk about allies, and I kind of think that the word allyship has become a bit watered down. I like accomplices. I like co-conspirators. And I think that that's what we all need to be to each other. Every one of us in this room has a different lived experience, but with the same kind of shared commonality and same goal of where we want to get to. So let us move even beyond allyship and be the greatest co-conspirators, the greatest accomplices to each other, and let us work in collaboration. And as I said, it's about collaboration, not competing. I know we're all fighting for our lives and fighting for funding, but let's find greater ways of cross-working with each other. And I want to say to every queer person, especially black queer women, who I always feel are the center of everything. We are, don't laugh. I want to say that I absolutely see you. When we're told we are too much, we're enough. Yeah. When we're told that we're too aggressive, no, we are passionate. Yeah. Yeah. When we are told that we are talking too loudly, turn up the bloody volume. In a world that is filled with so much pain, we really do need to understand, what does joy look like for us? And for me, when people ask me, what's my drive is about reimagining a future that feels so right. My joy is about understanding what legacy means.
I think what Lady Phil said resonated with so many people, no matter where in the globe they were from. She really did cover problems from all over the globe. One thing that really caught me, which I sadly wasn't able to record, was this. When America sneezes, we catch the cold. And I would definitely say that this is true. A lot of the rollback on rights we're seeing in the UK right now have all been seen in America just a few months or years earlier. And this isn't just opinions from governments, but from anti-LGBT speakers on social media sites like Facebook, Twitter and TikTok. The rise in these sites and their following have granted these people megaphones to feel hate across country lines. But there is one exception to this rule, which kind of flips this idea on its head, and that is the topic of transphobia in the UK. I've mentioned many times in this podcast now that transphobia is both worse in the UK and in the USA. But the UK is the country that is spearheading this campaign of transphobia, mainly by one specific author originally from Scotland who, since gaining massive popularity and fame from her books, decided to use all of this to fund organisations to take the rights of trans people away. And sadly this year, in the UK, a very major ruling was made that was and still is very detrimental to trans people. Many people, not only within our community, but outside our community as well, have already been affected by this ruling, and never in a positive way. And we can see that this is just a stepping stone for worse things to come. What broke my heart even more was that when this ruling was made, instantly on social media, I found so many people celebrating this very dangerous ruling. And it was all significantly funded and pushed by this female author, who was able to use her money, power and platform to make sure that trans people were heard. So when I heard that Enrique Anate would be holding a breakout session around countering anti-LGBTQ plus misinformation, I knew I had to attend. If you haven't heard of Enrique by name, you may have definitely heard of his journalism platform, Openly News. They're a news platform across social media covering LGBTQ plus news across the globe impartially, making sure that no matter which country you're from, the news you hear is fair, inclusive and accurate. His breakout session was so informative, and I was actually able to grab him just after the session to hear more about what he had to say about misinformation and how we can help correct it.
And I think something that is really important that caught my eye that you mentioned in your panel was the idea of pre-bunking, of finding these cracks before they happen. So what's the best way to look out for these before they emerge?
Right, so I think it's important to understand that anti-LGBTQ plus narratives are always the same. It's always about how gays bring sickness. It's always about how children abuse. It's always about a foreign threat. It's always about a Western imposition. So we need to understand how these narratives work in each local context. We need to know that context. We can't pretend like you're in Germany and be like, oh, this is what Spanish people are gonna think, for example. You need to know the local context and also maybe research how, because everything's been invented already, right? Most things have been discussed already. So really research the topics that we're trying to cover. And because basically it's always going to be repeated, I think.
Yeah.
So for example, we saw that with self-ID and trans self-determination. It's always the same claims in the different European countries that have been debating these bills or laws. And it's just with local, you know, adaptations. So so what you do is, if they were debating that, if they were making those claims in the UK, for example, and we start to see them being, you know, resonating with German audiences, then before that happens, you are proactively, like, pre-banking the, you know, the misinformation. I think it's very important to understand when activists say there is a global anti-gender movement, like they're not lying, it is a global movement. It just translates itself into different local contexts, right? So I think if we saw these local manifestations as just, you know, separated movements, we would not be able to identify the bigger picture. And it's very, I think, useful, especially for audiences who do not really understand these topics. Everyone who knows a little about trans rights knows about how these narratives are just replicated in different countries. The people who do not know about that, people who have other things to deal with, who are worried about climate change, who are worried about like health, who are worried about economic issues, they don't know about that. If we are able to sort of like paint the bigger picture, I think we will be able to build these communities that are much more resilient against misinformation.
This summit really was full of people who want change and are working hard for it. Every single person in that room had their own story to tell. Whether it happened in their family, their community, or even their country, these are stories that need to be heard, and we will all be fighting hard to make sure they are. One story I'm not sure many people have heard about is from Andrea Rivas in Argentina. When I first heard that they had an important story to share, I knew it would be serious, but nothing could have ever prepared me for what I was about to hear. As soon as I heard it, I knew it needed to be included in this podcast.
I am Andrea Rivas. I'm the president of AFDA, which is an LGBTI organization based in Argentina. We do national work, and also we are present and working in multilateral forums. That's why we are co-chairing right now as the civil society co-chair of the International Working Group at the Equals Rights Coalition. And we are doing that with the member state Chile. And that's a very powerful space because we are working with different governments and the civil society around the world. Well, we are a country that stands as a pioneering country with LGBT laws, and with the 2 years of that we are having now of a far-right government, that was a big change for us. We were very used to be free and to have to be safe, really. So with the rise of hate speech and a lot of far-right fans that are so radical in how they address and so hateful, we started to feel very, very insecure, and there were a massacre of four lesbians. They were attacked and murdered. Their house was set on fire, so three of them died. And that was terrible for us. And there's a lot of that kind of attacks to regular people, usually poor LGBTI persons. And another thing that is very worrying is that the Ministry of Security of Argentina issued an order that they can cyber patrol your social media without any judiciary order. So I can be cyber patrolled right now by my government while I'm here talking freely to you in the UK, and I don't even know about that.
Would you say that the LGBT community in Argentina is a big community?
Yeah.
And they're just not being able to show their voice. So it's quite controlled media at the moment.
It is quite uncontrolled,
So how does coming to a conference like this and hearing what different people's voices, how does that help build your knowledge to help back in Argentina?
Because I think that people from the global north, from different countries that are more free right now, or even under stress, like the United, the US, people from the US, they need to know and collaborate, and we need to start collaborating with different positions that we are having right now, because maybe I'm afraid to do something in my country, but I can call you and say, can you pass this message in your media, and maybe that's going to have an impact in Argentina, because when people from countries, powerful countries, are and journalists, media, civil society are watching everything change, the governments, our government, they are very worried about how they are perceived from powerful actors, for example, the UK or another ones.
Yeah. And taking a look at the media, how do you see the global opinion of the LGBT community right now?
Very polarized. And I think that we need to talk and to get the message to different persons, because sometimes I think that a lot of people isn't aware of what they are doing with us and how the, for example, funding cuts are impacting vulnerable people, and how they are going to impact them too, because it's like we are like a bait. They start with us, but what they really want is to erode democracy and change the rules of economic sovereignty that we need to have.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we're talking about this as well, because to be honest, I've never heard about any of the things that you've just mentioned. I've never heard about cybersecurity. I've never heard about the massacres that have been happening in Argentina. So these conversations really are important to make sure that that your voices are heard in Argentina. So thank you so much to not only coming to this conference, but talking to me today as well, because I'm very shocked from what I've heard, but thank you so much for letting me know, so that not only I can know, but the people who are listening to the podcast can find out about this, and if they want to hear more about it, they can do their own research into it as well, and hopefully Argentina can get into a better situation about this.
Thank you very much for having me in the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hearing this was definitely a shock to the system. A lot of the global affairs news I get is mostly from social media, so to hear that there are governments that are hushing serious problems that are happening to their populations seriously does concern me, because it really does make you think. If something as big as that was able to be hidden from a global audience, what other smaller problems are slipping through the cracks that we're not aware of? But I really am so grateful to Andrea for being able to have the strength to fight against their own government's oppression for LGBT rights. Because the more people who are aware of this, the more justice will come to their community. What was definitely unexpected for me during this summit was that even though this was a primarily LGBTQ+ centred summit, so many of these issues in our communities seem to overlap with the issues seen by the BIPOC and disabled communities too. And I realised this quite early on in the summit as well. During a panel which talked about EDI and LGBTQ+ protections, one of the questions which was brought up which really stuck with me was the idea of, when creating these initiatives for EDI, companies and organisations need to ask themselves, does this EDI initiative represent who it was made for? Because sadly, a lot of the time, people in the boardroom making these kinds of decisions aren't actually representing who they're trying to help, which on a whole causes initiatives and policies that help no one. One person from the panel who really stood out to me was Jill Hunter from Square One Law, which is one of the most inclusive law firms in Newcastle, and I was actually able to pull her aside after the panel to hear more about her work and how she thinks EDI can be improved.
I'm a queer person, I'm a woman, I have a disabled son, I have a lot of sort of lived experience of things that can hold you back and can put you on an unlevel playing field, and I want to make sure that nobody faces some of the barriers that I felt and that I experienced when I was coming up through business. So I'm very heavily involved in that aspect of it as well.
Yeah.
Business leaders in the Northeast, you hear a lot of the time, they'll say, yeah, but the Northeast isn't diverse. Now, that's wrong. That is wrong. The Northeast is a diverse place. You're just not looking hard enough, is my view. But we have to go beyond just ticking boxes. It's no good just to say, oh, look at all of the queer people we've got, or look at the black people we've got, because that's tokenism. What you want is diversity, true diversity of thought across your business, because it's stronger. But then what you want is for those people to stay with you. You don't want people to come and then go, oh, actually, the culture's terrible, I'm leaving. So it's a much bigger piece. It's about making sure your culture is one where people feel like they're included, feel like they're welcome, and feel like they belong, and that's somewhere where they can build a career. The first thing that any leader of business needs to do is to look at themselves and say, why do I want this? Why is this important to me? Because you need to be able to articulate that to your people to bring them on board. You can't expect people just to go along with you just because you said so. Otherwise, again, it'll be meaningless. So you've got to look at yourself. You've got to get your leadership team on board, and you've got to look at the culture of the business, because the culture has to support diverse voices within that business. So it's it's not something you can fix overnight. But it does produce real results. And I don't just mean you get more black people in your business or you get more Muslim people. You get real tangible business results.
It was really insightful talking to Jill, because when we talk about diversity and inclusion, we don't really think about it from the business's perspective. So hearing what Jill had to say about it really put things in perspective for me. So where do we go from here? That is definitely a question I ask myself a lot at the end of the summit, and even now I'm asking myself it. And I don't mean from an organisation or governmental standpoint, I mean for us, ordinary, everyday people. What can we do to make sure that we feel safe to be out and proud in not only Gateshead, but everywhere? One thing I've come back to time and time again throughout every episode of this podcast is that what we need right now is education. The ability for everyone to learn just that little bit more so people inside and outside our community can be more accepting. But it's sometimes hard to find those resources that we can trust that will teach us how what we need to know so that we can have more meaningful conversations. So with that in mind, I met Bex Maxwell-Warrior from the Proud Science Alliance. I met them during their breakout session with Imran Ali about intersectionality and inclusivity in the UK, which brought up points that I'd never actually thought about before. So I was really interested to talk with them afterwards so they could help me understand what we can do to begin these conversations.
So how do we get into make sure that all intersectionality is inclusive in the workplace?
In the workplace, so I think first and foremost education. We need to be educated about the different aspects of identity and understand how those different intersections of our identity can have a profound impact on us. So for instance, as a white LGBTQ plus person, my experiences are different than somebody who is Muslim or is black, and they may have instances where they feel excluded from places that are designed to be safe spaces, and because of those aspects of their identity. So education, learning about those other aspects of identity, even if they don't affect you, is important. I think another piece is advocating for people. So taking the time to understand what it means to be truly inclusive. So for instance, if people have invisible disabilities, they may not vocalise that, it may not be apparent. How can we make inclusive spaces that take into account that there may be somebody in the room right now who is neurodivergent? What can we do to make sure that they feel more included and part of this safe space and this conversation? And to go back to education, I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I can offer is educate yourself. Go to reputable sources, yes, but don't rely on individuals who identify a certain way to be the ones who educate you, because it can be exhausting. You can be the second or third or fourth person today that they've had to correct or inform. So yes, ask them about their identity, don't make it a taboo subject, but don't use that as a learning resource for you. Go away and do the work yourself.
Yeah, so if people are trying to find a way for education, where would they be able to go for it?
There's lots of different resources. So if you're looking for free resources, the first point of call I always lead to is charities. So going to places like the LGBT Foundation and Stonewall and really listening to the stories of individuals who have those lived experiences is important. So that's number one. Number two is if you have access to books or a library, reading. One of the most powerful books that I have read in the past few years has been Beyond the Gender Binary by Alok Vade Menon, which is designed for teenagers. It's designed for people who are late teens to learn about identity and how there is not just a binary gender. But also expand your knowledge set. Don't learn from news sources without going to reputable sources of information and looking there.
Yeah. And do you think that intersectionality and inclusive spaces are getting improving right now, or where do you think we are at our current moment?
I'm torn with this one. I think improvements have happened. You know, we are more inclusive in terms of, in the UK, we have gay marriage, you're able to adopt and have children. But we're also at this precipice at the moment where we're watching global rights be rolled back at a rate that we haven't experienced before. And because of that, and because of the negative rhetoric that stands around diversity and inclusion, especially around what it means to have a DEI department, so Diversity, Equity, Inclusion department, people are thinking negatively about the steps that we take to be more inclusive. And because of that, we're really losing momentum. So what can we do about it? Well, it's about not going away and not shying away from those difficult conversations. And they can be difficult. You know, we can have conversations with individuals, but we've sort of lost the ability as a society to have genuine one-on-one conversation that doesn't become heated. And because these matters matter to people, and therefore they get passionate, and I love that people are passionate about it, but sometimes we lose the engagement with individuals who are against us because we don't listen to what they're saying, or we don't give them the opportunity to say how it feels. And for some individuals, they're not in a position to be able to listen to that negative rhetoric. And I would say that it has to come from a place of your mental safety first. So if you're in a conversation with somebody where you're trying to educate and it's not going the way you want it to, it's okay for you to step back and say, you know what, I can't do this right now. But if you are in a position to be able to have these conversations with individuals, engaging in them in a way that comes from kindness and compassion and wanting to help educate, rather than from a place of I'm right and you're wrong, can really help develop. So it's a tough question. I think we have a lot to be proud of. We also have a lot to be ashamed of. LGBTQ plus people are not one thing. They're not just gay, they're not just bi, they're not just trans. They can also be disabled and an asylum seeker, and black or Muslim. So we have to be inclusive of all of those identities and not just one.
Yeah. And how do we start to open up those conversations?
I think we can't shy away from them. I think sometimes what happens is we're feared of having these conversations because people are feared of saying the wrong thing. Something that I say when I lead conversations of this nature is there's no such thing as a silly question, and I would rather you ask me something that you deem to be wrong and go away educated than leave this room and not have an answer to something that actually you need to know. Not everybody is in a position to have conversations of that nature. They can be quite triggering. You know, if you ask an individual to ask me what you really think, and you get questions such as, why can I use the word queer, or I don't agree with transgender people, it can be triggering, it can be harmful. But if you have the capacity to sit with somebody and say to them, can you tell me why it is you feel that way? Or can you tell me where you heard that? You then have the opportunity to educate them because you're listening to them. Education, especially, I think people think that education stops when you finish school, but really there's things that we all have to learn at every point in life, and you have to see it as a gift. You have to see education as a gift, as a way for us to expand our mindset, to understand more people. And at the end of the day, we want to create a world where everybody's welcome and everybody is equal. But yeah, it's something I'm very passionate about, so I appreciate the kind words there, and I'm happy to have conversations like this at any time.
Voices like Beck's is one of those that I would love to hear more of, not only in our community, but in widespread media in general, because it really does fill me with hope. The way that they're able to hold conversations that might seem daunting at first, but really do end with effective change, is really something to be admired, and I will definitely be using those resources that Beck's mentioned to further my own understanding too. I think one thing I can take away from this entire experience, not just this summit, but this podcast in general, is that we have a long way to go. It's undeniable, but there is definitely hope there. And I think if we're able to start making that change now in our community, then hopefully that change will stick and it will be changed for the better. When we look on the outside about LGBT issues in the media we watch, a lot of it is sadly heated exchanges and arguments. But just like Bex and Lady Phil said, it doesn't have to be that way. These are conversations that us as the LGBT community can have, and we have meaningful support from our local organisations so that we can go about our everyday lives and feel safe enough to be truly ourselves without the threat of LGBT phobia. This podcast has really shown me how strong our LGBT community in Gateshead is. I got to discover some truly amazing organisations like The Drop-In in Dunstan, some amazing role models like Stephen and Gareth from Mr Gay GB, and some truly inspirational stories like Emmanuel from the Newcastle Panthers and Lady Phil. These are all stories that I'm only just hearing now, and I'm truly am proud to show them on this podcast. Our community is truly tight-knit and is only growing stronger and more welcoming by the day. So all that there is left to say is thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I am truly happy to say that we are all Gateshead and proud. I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid.